If you go to a history book of famous missionaries, chances are you're not going to find in most history books written about famous missionaries the name of Lutherans. Now, why is that? It's because Lutherans have no missionary zeal. Well, here in the first half hour of Issues Etc., we're going to see if we can dispel that myth with the story of one very famous Lutheran missionary, Friedrich Wennekin. We're going to be talking about him and really the amazing accomplishments taken and the bravery of men there in the 19th century doing their best to bring the gospel to what was still then a frontier. Now, we consider it the Midwest today. We think it's right the heartland of our continent, the heartland of our nation in America, but a pretty wild place 150 years ago or more. We're going to be talking about Friedrich Wennekin here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Dr. Martin Noland will be our guest. And then in the second half hour, a little bit of audio open lines for your questions and your comments. We'll hear a very interesting interview between Bishop T.D. Jakes of Potter's House in Dallas, Texas, on the Today Show, between him and Katie Couric. We'll also hear a piece from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly, kind of connecting with the whole Jakes interview, on the 100th anniversary of the Azusa Street Revival. There have been many protests at soldiers' funerals in the Midwest by those who were saying every dead soldier who comes home from Iraq or Afghanistan is God's judgment and punishment on our nation for the sin of homosexuality. We'll hear a little bit about that. Also, there's a Roman Catholic Church reaction to the Da Vinci Code, even in advance of the release of the Dan Brown's book, now become a film. All that during audio open lines. Our call-in number is 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. We'll spend some time with Pastor John Pless of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, talking about prayer at the 4:30 mark. And then, in the last half hour of the program, couple things. Oh, I'm sorry, at the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about the polygamy laws in the U.S. Is it legal or illegal? And if it's illegal, why? And how much longer could it possibly stay illegal if we permit things like gay marriage and same-sex unions? There are women in Iran who apparently are wearing their head coverings too loosely, literally. And this has some of the religious leaders in Iran upset. We'll hear a piece on that during some more audio open lines. The last half hour of the program, Name That Religion. We didn't get to it yesterday. We will get to it today. We're going to play four sound bites, each from a religious leader. They're not all Christian, I'll tell you that. We will tell you that there are, among these four, we'll tell you what the four religions are, but you have to put them in their proper order. We'll play them in the same order every time, and we want to hear from you during Name That Religion. What order do you think they're being put in? Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here in the first hour, Dr. Martin Noland joins us here in Studio A from the Concordia Historical Institute. We're going to be talking with him about Friedrich Wennekin. If you haven't heard the name, you do want to stay tuned. Very interesting, rather swashbuckling character, if I do say so myself. Pastor Martin Noland is our guest. Marty, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be here.
What is your favorite story about Friedrich Wennekin?
Well, let me tell the story about when Pastor Wennekin was a preacher in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And here's how the story goes. Everybody knew that German preacher. That was because he came from Germany and spoke German. And they knew where he stood on doctrine and morality. Many a guy became his way, but he was never at a loss for a reply, and the shots went home. To relate one instance, the following serves as an example. "Say, preacher," said one man to him, "do you really believe what you preach?" "I don't believe it," he said, with the emphasis on a personal pronoun. "Well, then be sure to continue in that confession," replied Wennekin, as he got on his horse. "And when the devil has you by the collar and drags you into hell, then shout as loud as you can, 'I don't believe it! I don't believe it!'" And with that, Wennekin rode off, leaving the man to stand in the road. But a few days later, he had spoken so wisely, came back to the store where the encounter had occurred, and he asked for Wennekin, and he said, "That pastor made me uneasy. I have to speak to him again." They did meet again, and the scoffer became a believer. Winnikin really knew how to deal with the men and women that he had to deal with. And sometime it was this sort of confrontation. And he was very successful in his ministry, and that's just one example.
Okay, give us a brief history of this guy, known as the German preacher, for whom I think a hall on this seminary campus is named. He is, in fact, the founder of the of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Tell us about Friedrich Winnikin.
Winnikin is a often neglected figure. We have only a little bit on him in our archives, so just a couple of small boxes. And he deserves for more to be known about him. He was born in Germany in Hanover in about 1810, 1811. And his father was a Lutheran pastor. His father died while Frederick was still a boy. And his mother raised the children on a pension. Frederick wanted to be a pastor, but when he went to the university, first at Göttingen and then Halle, he was not too impressed with the religion of the day, and so he kind of schwaffled around for a while. But what really did impress him was reading a number of missionary magazines, and they told about the work of German and Lutheran missionaries around the world. What really caught his attention as a young man was the stories about mission work in North America, among the Indians, among the frontier. And so when he got old enough, he went to university, he got theology, he was examined, became a pastor, and then went to North America on his own, really. He had a little bit of funding, but he wasn't really sent as a missionary society. What his intent was and what he did was he connected himself to the church that was here in the United States at the time, which was the Pennsylvania Ministerium, and this is in about 1838, and as well the General Synod that it was attached to. He came into Baltimore, Maryland, by boat and got to know some of the Lutherans there, and after they got to know him, they sent him to the far, far west, which in that day was eastern Indiana, if you can imagine that. The Mississippi here was kind of out like an island of civilization, but really the frontier was out in Ohio and Indiana in 1838, and people were still moving west. And from there, it's really where he set up his ministry. He served in Decatur and Fort Wayne, Indiana, which are in northeastern Indiana, for those that don't know that. And over the years, that has become, because of his work, one of the centers of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod work. From there, he took a circuit, that is, he got on a horse and rode on horseback to wherever he could find German settlements. He went up into Michigan and along the southern tier of Michigan, went all the way out to Lake Michigan around St. Joseph, and then went south to Crawfordsville, Indiana, near it's north of Indianapolis, and then back to Fort Wayne. And in this trip, as well as experience around Fort Wayne, he just came to realize that there were so many people that either had immigrated from Germany or that had immigrated from Pennsylvania west that were out there on the frontier, and they were busting the sod, they were tearing down the forests and planting their farms, but they had no churches, they had no schools, the children were being raised without any knowledge of religion, people were living together without wedlock, any number of things, and it really, really bothered him.
No.
He just could not manage all this by himself.
I mean, such was frontier life. I mean, they
exactly.
did not have, some of these people were so remote that they had, Winnikin had to ride not on roads, not even on trails through the woods, but kind of blindly over the countryside through the woods without any guide for days and days to even find these little farm settlements. So when he found them, given the fact that he was covering thousands of square miles, what could he possibly do before he had to pick up and go on to the next little group of people?
Well, what he would do is at each settlement or house, he would inquire to see if they were of the Lutheran faith or German in some cases, and then he would see what their spiritual condition was. And if there were, for example, children that had not been baptized, which was usually the case, he would baptize them immediately. If there were people that had gotten together to live without the bands of marriage, he would perform a marriage ceremony. He would also inquire about the sick, if there's anybody, whether or not they were Lutheran, that were sick and in bed, and he would go administer them as a fellow Christian, like a chaplain would. And then he would keep track of these people, the people that wanted him to return. He would keep this in his notebook and diary, and then he would, over the years, keep coming back to these people. And eventually, of course, a lot of this area filled in, the villages became bigger, and then eventually they were able to start Lutheran churches in all these towns and villages.
Now, this seems to be, you know, we talked today about having a mission start, and what that usually means is, first of all, going out and prospecting for land, and if they can't buy land, they'll start a church in an elementary school or something like that. All you got to do is put out a sign, and you can get a dozen people to show up one way or the other. This is really very different from what we think of today as mission work in America. This was genuine frontier work. Some of these people were even isolated from one another. I mean, it's not as though he was coming upon towns or villages.
Right, and this was what the Methodists were doing throughout the United States. The Methodists were on the frontier, and as the settlers, as the Indians were pushed back and the settlers came and started farming and making villages, the Methodists were right there. And in Winnikin's mind, the Methodists were the competition because there were German Methodists that were doing the same thing that he was. And he always felt that German Methodism was kind of like they were traitors. You know, you could understand English Methodists, but not German Methodists. You know, Germans should be Lutheran. That's kind of, I think, the way he thought about this. But they were his competition. He was doing the same thing. He was a circuit preacher, but he was much more competent theologically than they were. And was going, following the frontier, following the social networks where people were, and trying to keep them Christian. And over a period of time, as I said, as the areas filled up, then he was able to start churches there. So he's not unique in terms of as if he came up with this ministry himself. But he was unique. He became unique because he was the first of this type of preacher to be what we today call a confessional Lutheran. But now he was not all, as I said before, when he came from Baltimore to Fort Wayne, he was associated with the Pennsylvania Ministerium. And he had rather, well, we today would consider somewhat loose practices. Well, when he went to Germany, which he did in order to raise money and men for all these places, he talked with a man in near Nuremberg named Wilhelm Lea, as well as some other, we just say, more conservative Lutherans. And these people were battling the influence of the Prussian Union. Now, you remember, Winnikin came from Hanover, and Hanover was a relatively conservative principality and state church. But when he did his missionary trip, he went to Saxony and Prussia and Bavaria, and he found there the church was much more under the influence of rationalism and the ideas of unionism. That is, that, well, we just need to be Protestant, and that's it. Well, those that wanted to be Lutheran there had learned by experience what does it take to keep a people to be faithful to the Word of God from a Lutheran standpoint. And so when he went back to America after his German trip, this is how he changed. He stopped. He was holding prayer meetings kind of like the Methodists did. He stopped doing that. He stopped inviting other preachers, that is non-Lutheran preachers, to come into his pulpit. He stopped letting the Reformed, that is the people that don't believe that Christ's body and blood are really his, he stopped letting those people come to his altar. He stopped fellowshipping or participating with Reformed conferences. And in his pulpit, he started preaching against the errors of the Reformed and the Methodists.
Now, this really flies in the face of modern mission methodology, which says in order to really do missions, you have to be a little lax in your practice. You have to soften up your doctrinal positions. It sounds as though the more earnest he became about the mission work he was engaged in, the more careful he was about what he taught and how he practiced it.
Well, and again, I don't know if he learned this on his own here in America, but it was when he went back to Germany. And he heard the news about the Stephanite immigration in Germany, by the way. That's the people that came to Missouri. and the Saxons with Martin Stefan and C.F.W. Walther. But those people have been struggling with this kind of lax Protestantism and, you know, you can be a Methodist and I'll be a Lutheran and we'll all get together type of thing. The people there, the pastors were finding that as soon as they let this go, their people not only became very lax and lost their Lutheran identity, but they also became lax in other areas, including morality, because all standards were let go. And so he learned by talking to the pastors in Germany that the ecumenism of the Prussian Union and those things was really detrimental to the church, and he realized that all the work that he was doing in America would be undermined by that approach. And so he went back to Luther, as it were, and taught and practiced a more strict Lutheranism after his trip to Germany.
We're talking about 19th century pastor and missionary Friedrich Winneken. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. He's director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. In about 10 minutes, we'll have audio open lines. We'll begin with Bishop T.D. Jakes on the Today Show being interviewed by Katie Couric. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Did he have any formal mission endeavors with Native Americans? Because after all, that's really who the people who were living out here at the time, even as these German and other nationalities were settling what was then the West.
I don't know if he had any connections himself. Of course, he knew about the Native Americans that lived here. And I think he was responsible for informing Wilhelm Lea in Germany about the opportunities that were here. Wilhelm Lea then started a colony in Michigan, in Lower Michigan, in the Saginaw Bay area, and sent another pastor named August Kramer, who served half-time as a missionary to the Native Americans. They were Chippewa tribe there, and the other half-time to the Germans from Franconia, who he sent as colonists. But I don't think that Winneken himself ever personally had contact with Indians, at least from the information that I have.
Okay, you mentioned that when the population grew enough in these frontier areas, it was possible for this itinerant missionary to actually start congregations, not just isolated families, but families meeting together regularly for the preaching of God's word and the administration of the sacraments. So how do you get pastors to these isolated congregations out on the frontier? How did they do that?
Well, this was not an easy thing, and this is the reason that Winneken did go to Germany. In those days, the American frontier was a rough place, and a lot of the stories we have about Winneken is his willing basically to rough it almost his entire life, living in log cabins, living in the outdoors, riding on horseback through rain and snow and mud and sleet and swamps and everything else. And when he encouraged men for the ministry that he was doing, because there was a great need out there, he didn't mince words. He said, this is what you're going to run into. And, it was hard to most guys wanted a comfortable parish in the city with a little bit of money and a nice pension, and there's no guarantee that Winneken could promise him. So he really, in that sense, was what we consider today like a bush missionary. You know, he's really putting aside the comforts of life in order to preach the gospel. But what he did when he got to Germany, again, this name, Wilhelm Lea, Lea really took an interest in Winneken's work and so began supplying pastors. But they weren't university-trained pastors. They were second-career men that had decided that the gospel had touched them, and they wanted to serve, but, you know, they didn't have college training. So what Lea did was he put them on a crash course for about a year of what it took to be a pastor, without Greek and Hebrew, without the classical training that most pastors get. And then then Lea shipped them to the United States, and Winneken then distributed them through Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. And this group of pastors then was the other half that joined the Saxons in 1847 to join the Missouri Synod.
The congregation that I served for almost a decade was founded by one of those, they called them the Zendlinge, the sent ones from Wilhelm Lea. One of those men, What's that?
Do you remember the name of the pastor?
It's Schieffer-Decker.
Schieffer-Decker, yeah.
Yes, and rode the circuit in southern Illinois,
right.
Up and down the hills and the hollows of southern Illinois between congregations that are about 20, 25 miles apart from one another. This really meant that the pastor of these congregations was constantly on the move.
Yeah,
very
no
different
doubt.
From today's kind of... he's got a parsonage, he stays in this one place, and you can reach him at his office anytime
right.
you want to.
Right. So, and then after Leah stopped, which was about 1853, because there was some breakup between the Missouri Synod, then a seminary in Staden in Germany continued this type of supply of basic trained pastors up until the end of the 19th century. And Missouri Synod is indebted both to Leah and the Staden Seminary for its ability to minister to this type of mission.
Let's take a phone call before we take our break. And Marty, I'd like you to stay with us for just a few minutes on the other side of this break. Herman is calling from Illinois, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Herman.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to go back to what Dr. Nolan mentioned earlier, that when Pastor Winneken went back to Germany, apparently it was a very significant influence on him to find that while the state churches in Saxony and Prussia had weakened with unionism, that the Hanover Church in that area still held to a strong Lutheran orthodoxy and confessionalism, and that influenced him greatly. That had been my suspicion in the situation in Germany coming up there, that Hanover held on longer to a Lutheran identity than some of the other German state churches. And then Germany was not yet united under Bismarck's policy yet. And I would be correct to assume that Hanover held out and proved to be a beneficial influence to Pastor Winneken.
Herman, thank you very much. About a minute here before we go to our break.
Yeah, Herman's actually, he's very correct that Hanover was one of the principalities that was not part of the initial influence of the Prussian Union, and it hung on as a conservative Lutheran outpost until Bismarck's 1870 unification of Germany. But even today, if you look at the what they call the Landeskirchen, that is the state churches, the Hanover Church is probably one of the most conservative and most traditional Lutheran of the state churches. Now, it's not anywhere near as conservative and I would say traditional Lutheran as the Free Church, the Selbstständige Evangelische Lutherische Kirche that we're in fellowship with. But yes, you can see differences, and I think that explains a lot about Winneken and the people that he was able to bring to America.
We're talking with Dr. Martin Noland about 19th century pastor and missionary Friedrich Winneken. Marty is the director of the Concordia Historical Institute based here in St. Louis. When we come back, I want to talk about the founding of an American Lutheran seminary. In fact, it's Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. One of our underwriters, Friedrich Winneken, was not only a pastor in Fort Wayne, but also instrumental in the founding of that American seminary, providing pastors for American Lutherans, and also his role in the founding of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We'll have Marty for a few more minutes on the other side of this break. Then we're going to start RDO Open Lines. We'll begin with Bishop T.D. Jakes. He was on the Today Show. Stay tuned.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What impact do teachings like creation, the fall into sin, the cross of Christ, law and gospel, simultaneously saint and sinner, the Word of God, baptism, and the Lord's Supper have on everyday life? Our Issues Etc. book of the month for May is titled A Theology to Live By, The Practical Luther for the Practicing Christian. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about A Theology to Live By on our website, issuesetc.org. The cost is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Luther's theology is not abstract speculation, but teaching with a practical application for the real Christian life. A Theology to Live By, Practical Luther for the Practicing Christian, by Herman Preuss. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for May. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
The majority of American women are pro-life, and their voices were recently heard in Washington.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Just last month, women from across the country took part in a pro-life lobbying day called Real Women's Voices. Thanks to those who traveled to the nation's capital and many others who called their elected officials that day, members of Congress are better informed about why they should support the Child Custody Protection Act and why they must ban human cloning. Real women delivered these messages, and we believe their voices will make a real difference on Capitol Hill.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org. That's sba-list.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Today is the National Day of Prayer, and I hope that you'll take some time today to pray for this country. St. Paul says, "I urge that requests, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for everyone, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness." Whatever you may think about the so-called separation of church and state, praying for our country is good. Good for the country, good for you and me. The theme of today's Day of Prayer is America Honor God. I don't object to America honoring God, but when this minute is over, I hope that you'll do some thinking. Honor God. That's a command, something to do. When you believe in God, as He has made Himself known to us in the Bible, you will respond with good deeds. For example, honoring Him and encouraging others to do the same. The danger lurking in the theme, America Honor God, is that we will think it's our honoring that makes us acceptable to the Almighty. But Ephesians 2 tells us, by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not from yourselves. It is a gift of God, not by works. So with gratitude for grace, not with self-righteous honoring God, please pray for America. Lord, keep this nation under your care and guide us in the way of justice and truth.
Turn on most other radio stations that are religious. Look at the sermons on television. We hardly ever hear the gospel. The true gospel, that we are declared righteous while we're still sinners. Before any improvement has begun, God declares us as saints. I want to say that again because that's what the gospel is. That through faith in Jesus Christ, an individual is declared a saint.
Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, weekday evenings at 6:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about 19th century missionary and pastor Friedrich Winneken. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. Coming up here in just a few minutes, we're going to start audio open lines. T.D. Jakes was on the Today Show. Katie Couric, a rather gushing interview with T.D. Jakes. We'll hear a bit of that and get your reaction as well. Some other audio to play later on during this hour of Issues, etc. Marty, I got a couple questions about the founding of this seminary, this American Lutheran Seminary up in Fort Wayne. Winneken was instrumental in it. Did it just come to the point where these American Lutherans said, look, rather than buy the milk, why don't we own the cow, and let's start a seminary where we can produce our own pastors here in this country?
It worked something like that. It's Wilhelm Lea's idea together with Winneken. Winneken began to find men that he could groom to be pastors, and so he started training them in Fort Wayne, and he talked about this with Lea, and Lea said, well, you know, I've been doing the same thing in Neuendettelsau. Why don't I send the guys to you and you can finish the job or start the job? And that's pretty much how the seminary got started in 1845, which is 2 years before the Missouri Synod was started.
So very briefly, what was Winneken's role in the founding of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod?
Well, he was he would be like considered a founding father, like Benjamin Franklin would be for the United States. And he, after Walther served about 3 or 4 years as president, Winneken served 14 years as president of the Synod, which was actually longer than both of the terms that Walther had combined. And he was very much admired by everybody, and that doesn't matter whether you're Bavarian or Saxon or whatever. So he really was, I think, the ideal pastor in many ways, and people looked up to him. He had the experience under the belt. He knew how to get this done on the frontier. He was selfless. He was devoted to the Word of God. He knew how to preach law and gospel. And he went where the need was, which is what the Missouri Synod needed to do. And hopefully it still does today. It goes where the need is, and you don't worry about the consequences.
I guess our listeners might not realize that in that day, taking a comfortable parish in Germany or in some big city in America was not considered a big sacrifice. Becoming a pastor was kind of considered the road to easy street, public respect, and a nice little living without a lot of work involved. It sounds as though there's a different legacy for someone like a Friedrich Winneken that we could learn from today. What is it?
Well, he's willing to sacrifice career aspirations, because the German divinity student, that is the guy that's going to be a pastor in Germany, he had the possibility of marrying into the lesser nobility, a very comfortable job, lots of influence, not a difficult job, really. Winneken puts that all aside, and he says, there are people that are starving for the Word of God out there. They will not hear the Word of God, and they're going to go to hell, and I need to help them. And that, to me, is there's a lot to be commended in somebody like that, and I hope that spirit is always in our Missouri Synod.
Dr. Martin Nolan is director of the Concordia Historical Institute based here in St. Louis. You can find out more about CHI on the web. Go to our website first, issuesetc.org. Look on the left-hand side, click links, scroll down, and you'll find a direct link to Martin Nolan and the Concordia Historical Institute, or you can also call CHI at area code 314-505-7900, 314-505-7900. Marty, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you for inviting me.
You know, it's just amazing to think that we sit there in the line of this history of men being trained for the ministry at this seminary founded by this missionary pastor of the 19th century, a man who, according to stories I've heard from Dr. Larry Rast, would wade up to his neck in swamps, be lost for days in the woods, and somehow, in the midst of all that, managed to help found a seminary, Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where that same emphasis on missions, going where the need is with what is needed, that is, the gospel of Jesus Christ and Him crucified, is still being practiced and taught today for young men training for the ministry there at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. A bunch of little Friedrich Winnekens coming out of that place every year. Their number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155. You can find out more at our website as well. Find the logo for Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Well, T.D. Jakes is all the rage nowadays. He's got books, lots of books. He's got movies. He's recorded a few CDs, I believe. He's quite a singer. And if you've ever seen T.D. Jakes on television, you know that if he's anything, he is an engaging individual. Time magazine speculated that he might be the next Billy Graham. Some question has been raised, however, about what he really believes. He was on the Today Show today with Katie Couric, and having an interesting interview in conjunction with his latest book. T.D. Jakes has aimed a lot of his message in the last 10 years or so from Potter's House in Dallas, Texas, at women. He had a famous book, then become a movie, called Woman, Thou Art Loosed. And if you listen to his message on television, well, he's the man's man, but he's preaching mostly to the women. Let's begin with this piece from NBC's Today Show, T.D. Jakes.
Well, he's been called the most influential black leader in America today. He's a best-selling author, but first and foremost, he's a preacher whose main message is encouragement and self-improvement. He's a powerful man with thousands of followers. He shares his message with everyone from inmates to world leaders. His name is Thomas Dexter Jakes, better known as Bishop T.D. Jakes of Potter's House in Dallas, Texas.
I love to preach, but I have a passion to teach.
When I leave here, I feel empowered. His ministry has changed my entire life.
The term televangelist doesn't do Jakes justice. Every week, his emotional sermons reach more than 30,000 congregants and a worldwide television audience.
Not only is he dynamic, motivational, but you can really relate to what he's saying.
A man of the cloth, selling God's message has made him a business icon as well.
I think that Jesus is the product And when the product is excellent, it doesn't require a big sales pitch.
Jakes has made a fortune selling his message through his books, TV shows, plays, and Grammy-nominated albums. In the process, he's attracted headlines across the globe. Time magazine touted him as the next Billy Graham. Jake says he wants to show people how they can apply God's message to their everyday lives. And it's that message of self-improvement that has captivated millions.
If you don't seize the moment and suck the very life out of it, the enemy will have stolen your greatest resource, which is time itself. Every morning you wake up, you need to blow God a kiss and thank him for another day.
Bishop T.D. Jakes is the author of a new book called Mama Made the Difference. Bishop Jakes, good morning. Nice to see
you. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is your 30th book, you were telling me?
Yes.
Wow, you're prolific.
Well, I don't know. I just write about different issues and have a lot of fun doing it. I enjoy it.
And you're not only an author. I mean, I was reading about your accomplishments. You've got your own TV show. You've written a ton of books. You own a music label. You write and produce plays, and you consult with world leaders in your spare time.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoy people. You know, I like to get involved and get engaged and just excited to share my perspectives with people.
And this is a real tribute to your mom. And I guess you can't really overstate the importance good parenting has on a child's psyche and on an adult's character, can you?
It stays with you a lifetime. It never goes away. You know, the things that our parents instill in us become the most vital resources to us. And it's not only about, as I wrote the book about my mother, but the lives of other people who were affected by their mothers that we see and revere and respect, and only to realize that it's not so much what the university put in you, but it's what your parents put in you around the dinner table that really has great impact on you in the long term.
Each chapter is an important lesson instilled by your mom,
right,
who passed away 3 years ago, is
That's
that right,
right.
Bishop
yes.
Jakes? And some of the titles are Believing in God, Believing in Yourself, Be Broad-Minded, Be Responsible,
yes,
When to Let Your Children Go, The Value of Support, Celebrate Others, Banish the Bitterness, Set Your Standard High.
Yes.
When you look back on everything your mom taught you, and I know your dad passed away when you were, what, 15 years old?
It was when I was 16 years old.
16 years old.
Yeah, I think when I was 10. And, you know, it was really a traumatic time, and watching my mother care for him taught me so much about relationships, not just to stay with people when things are going well, but when things are really going down, to really be there for them.
Well, in sickness and in health,
that's
right?
That's right, that's right.
But when you look at all these lessons that you've been taught, what stands out for you as the most important, sort of the paramount lesson?
You know, Katie, the amazing thing, Mom taught me to believe in God, but she also taught me to believe in myself. One without the other leaves you impotent. To understand that it's ultimately us and the power within us that enables us to have accomplishment, to be relentless, not to give up on your dreams. You run into obstacles when you're trying to do anything, but she didn't allow us to quit. She would say, you go back out there and do it again. And even though she's gone, I can still hear her voice in my head when I feel like giving up, saying, you go back out there and do it again.
Do you think that she taught you mostly by her actions and by example rather than words? Because sometimes I read these biographies of great people, and they have real concrete words that their parents told them. And I think as a mother, I'm not sure if I do that for my kids, but I try to be an appropriate and positive role model for them in my actions. Did your mom sit down and say, you know, listen, son, blah, 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 or was it mostly from watching her in action?
It's a little bit of both, because without being intentional, people listen at what you say and see if it matches up with what you do.
It's true, and kids often repeat what they hear, even if it's not directly said to them.
That's right, that's right. We overhear, we listen, and we get your philosophy, because our parents are our first teachers, they're our first leaders, and we learn from them and ultimately try to emulate them in some way.
You also have lessons from people like Colin Powell in the book, and Coretta Scott.
I had a great time talking to Colin Powell about his mother and his mother's sisters and how his family came over on fruit boats. And he said every time he wanted to quit, they said, we didn't come across here on a fruit boat from Jamaica for you to give up. You know, and you could see that how he ended up being the general, because they were coaching him, little short woman coaching him in the background.
It seems like persistence is a common theme, right? Not giving up,
Absolutely.
Not stopping, not throwing your arms out
Absolutely.
And saying, I can't do this.
Your mom is your coach. You know,
my mom always says, Everybody needs a cheerleader, and
that's
I'm
right.
yours.
That's right. I sat down with Bernice King. I said, I know who Coretta Scott King is as a civil rights leader, but what is she like as a mother? And you learn some fascinating things about behind the scenes, the glue that holds people together.
The quote in your book is, a woman has a dilemma when she says yes to the call of mothering while she is lonely for male attention. A woman cannot mother well if she is always going on dates. TD, you cut me like a knife. A lot of single mothers aren't always going on dates.
No.
And obviously they have to keep their priorities straight and maintain
that's,
the right
that's
balance.
What I'm saying. That's
but,
right.
But you don't fault women for being not completely self-sacrificing and also doing things that will keep them fulfilled personally,
no,
right?
Not at all, but I'm saying priorities.
Because if you were, I was going to have to.
If you were going to get me, I know better than that. No, but a lot of single mothers have tough choices, and I'm talking to that segment of single mothers who don't always have the priorities in the right place.
Right.
I've been an advocate.
Well, by the way, a lot of married mothers don't have
that's
the priorities
right.
in the right
that's
place
true.
Either.
That's true. But I've been an advocate for protecting children and making sure that when you're dating, you're not just looking for somebody who fits you, but also somebody who loves you and your child. And that's a harder task sometimes.
I have to mention, you have 5 kids yourself,
oh, yes.
ranging from ages what to what?
From 26 to 12.
So, wow, you got your hands full. So how can you do everything that I mentioned before?
Right.
30 books, speeches, TV shows, blah, blah, blah. I'm using blah, blah, blah a lot for some reason in this interview. But how do you do all you do and be a good and present father in your children's lives?
I think because it is a challenge for me, that's why I write about it. I understand I'm on the computer last night instant messaging my daughter and just going, trying to keep contact with them. It's a tough job, but we can do it.
Well, this is a great gift for Mother's Day, and certainly your mom was one very wise woman, but it's also a celebration of mothers everywhere.
That's right.
So, Bishop T.D. Jakes, thanks so much. It's really nice to meet you.
It's been a pleasure. I enjoyed
Thank you.
It.
Thanks.
So what do you do? I mean, you get good advice. There's no doubt about that. I mean, get your priorities straight for single women, for married women. Katie Couric, I mean, she's very interested in T.D. Jakes, I should say. She is a professional. She will be following Dan Rather into the anchor seat at CBS. And it sounds a lot like a Cub reporter in this Today Show interview. There's no doubt that he's got the Barry White appeal. There's no doubt about that. Is there something more to this? Without the Barry White appeal, without the passion in his preaching, the big passion, would it be the same? Would they be calling him the next Billy Graham? If you've ever watched T.D. Jakes, you know that this guy is, if anything, dynamic. He knows how to communicate in a very engaging way. So my question for you is, would he be as successful without that? If he didn't have what I think called the Barry White appeal? Now, he gives good advice, there's no doubt about it. But what is the appeal of someone like T.D. Jakes without the yelling and the screaming and all the stuff that goes on with T.D. Jakes? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here during Audio Open Lines, it's your opportunity to react to some of the stuff that we're bringing to you as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. He said in that little package they played before the interview, Jesus is the product. So if you got a good product, you don't have to give a great sales pitch. But look, I mean, T.D. Jakes is a great pitch man. I wonder, after watching him on television, is it Jesus? Is that the product he's pushing? Or is it T.D. Jakes? One thing always strikes me whenever I see these interviews of powerful, influential, and famous Christian leaders, whoever they may be, with very few exceptions, be it Rick Warren or even Billy Graham in his latter years here, Joel Osteen, T.D. Jakes, again and again and again, why can't these Christian leaders, these prominent and influential Christian people who have the media on the end of a string, who get opportunities like this live on television, no one's editing this whatsoever. Why can't they seem to get the gospel out? They say, T.D. Jakes says Jesus is the product. He's got a hold of millions of morning viewers. Time to sit down with Katie Couric. Live television. And the most he can muster is, believe in God. Well, that's not the gospel. Why can't these guys manage to get the gospel out? What did your mother teach you? What's the most important thing your mother taught you? Oh, believe in God, believe in myself. That's it? This is the next Billy Graham. Really? Believe in God, believe in yourself. You could get that from a truck driver on the side of the road. You could get that from your local bartender. What about trust in Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of my sins? It's live television. No one's going to cut it out. After all, he's T.D. Jakes. They're not going to cut it out. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's a generic God that we hear. So without the big passion, without the very wide appeal, without the dynamic and magnetic personality, do you think they'd be calling him the next Billy Graham? Do you think that he'd be as successful as he is? Steve writes from West County, is this a Christian pastor or Dr. Phil? This is a good moral lesson that no one can object to. This is an example of Christianity being viewed as moralism, not as salvation for sinful man. Good point, Steve. It's absolutely true. I mean, Katie Couric even loves the message. I don't know if she's a Christian or not, but it's good advice on how to be nice. So if you've got Joel Osteen for kind of the Bible Belt, white bread suburbanites, that's Joel Osteen's appeal. Then you got T.D. Jakes for the more slightly urbanized minority sector. Is that what it is? Because their message seems to be indistinguishable. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address. Steve, thanks for the email. issuesetc@kfuo.org. I still got to wonder. I mean, I just don't see it. This is the next Billy Graham. Here's a story that we've been following a little bit, and I thought that it was kind of a part and parcel of the war protest, just a strange twist on the war protest, but it isn't. A story from CNN on protesters at soldiers' funeral, and what they're protesting is not the war, but in fact, America and its stand on homosexuality.
They show up and shock.
Every dead soldier coming home is a punishment from the Lord your God.
At the funerals of service members killed in Iraq, these folks condemn the dead and their families.
You are a hell-bound minister of Satan.
Followers of the Kansas-based Westboro Baptist Church have been crisscrossing the U.S., protesting at more than 150 funerals of service members. They believe God is killing U.S. soldiers in Iraq to punish America for tolerating homosexuality. They've caused such a disruption that more than two dozen states are either trying to pass laws restricting the movement of the protesters or have already passed them. There's also a proposal in Congress for a federal law restricting their movement in national cemeteries. But the Westboro Baptist Church now has a powerful ally. The American Civil Liberties Union is filing suit to challenge Kentucky's new law.
What is important here is that the First Amendment protects the free speech rights of everyone, and that includes those whose message we dislike, that we find offensive.
The father of one U.S. soldier killed in Iraq, whose funeral was picketed by the church, as well as veterans group leaders, say their friends and loved ones died to protect freedom of speech. But this lawsuit...
It infuriates us. When you have some people that are out there just spreading this hate and prejudice and hiding behind the First Amendment to do so, it's something that's just not right. It doesn't sit well with, I would pretty much bet, most of Americans.
But Westboro won't stop. The group is heading to Michigan this weekend to protest at two soldiers' funerals. Michigan lawmakers are trying to pass one of those restriction laws, but it hasn't passed yet. Brian Todd, CNN, Washington.
Now, this is an amazing story to me. I thought when I first heard it that it was one of these things that happens and then it goes away. But this little group of, they call themselves Baptists, are not going away. And they're very upfront about their message. They believe that, as they said at the beginning of that piece, every soldier who comes home dead from Afghanistan or Iraq is God's judgment on America because of homosexuality. So what's your reaction to these funeral protests? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I mean, there's a number of different ways that you can react to this. I mean, it has to do with protesting at a dead soldier's funeral, but it also has to do with these people. They travel the country, keeping track of where the funerals will be so that they can protest outside. And they really have no problem with telling the parents who are there grieving their dead soldier, your son's death was God's punishment on this nation for homosexuality. Do you agree? I mean, I guess someone could agree in theory without saying, well, I agree, but I wouldn't go protest at the funeral. Are you one of those? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, Alan Combs has a radio program along with his Hannity and Combs television program on Fox News. He interviewed one of Pastor Phelps' daughters. Listen to this.
What God would have you protest the funerals of returning soldiers from Iraq? What God would have you deal with families this way, tell people they're going to hell, saying fag vets? What God would do this? Would Jesus do that?
You know, are you talking to me about Jesus Christ?
Yes.
You reject him, Alan Combs. What are you doing talking to me about?
I happen to be Jewish like Jesus was. You're not answering my question because I'm not a Christian.
It's the Lord your God who created you, the God of Abraham.
Shirley. Would Jesus approve of this kind of behavior toward returning vets?
Standing right out there with us.
He would, huh?
Absolutely.
He'd be holding a sign saying, thank God for dead soldiers. That's what Jesus Christ would be doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are serving the Lord your God. The Lord Jesus Christ and God the Father are part of the same God.
As I pointed out to you earlier tonight in a rather heated exchange on Hannity and Combs, I worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Which God do you worship?
And that's the God. You claim you worship him. Have you ever read the book of Jeremiah?
Yes.
All right, when we come back, very involved conversation, argument, I won't call it a debate because it doesn't even kind of rise to that level of structure, between Alan Combs on his radio program and one of the daughters of Pastor Fred Phelps, who's leading, who he and his family and congregation are leading these nationwide debates. It's just a little group of people traveling nationwide to soldiers' funerals to debate or to pronounce God's judgment on this nation for homosexuality. They're doing it at soldiers' funerals. We'll continue this interview between Alan Combs and the daughter of Pastor Fred Phelps right after this break. I want to hear from you in the meantime. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Audio open lines after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.